Hi everyone. Welcome to TTT, the Talking Transport Transformation Podcast, brought to you by TUMI, the Transformative Urban Mobility Initiative. Today we are celebrating a premiere. The podcast you're listening to is the first audio format we produce at TUMI. So it is really new and exciting for all of us. To honor this premiere, we have picked a topic that is among the most pressing in the transport sector right now: green recovery after the COVID-19 crisis. We want to explore what exactly is meant by this term and how sustainable mobility can become a key element of every green recovery strategy. To do so, we invited Dr. Jörn Richard into our virtual open street, where my colleague Lena sat down with him and had an enlightening chat about the crucial role of cities in the sustainable transformation of mobility, as well as the newborn popularity of active mobility and possible future business models of digitalization. Dr. Richard is working at the Mobility Institute Berlin. The MIB is a consulting and research company that promotes the sustainable transition of urban mobility. Together with his colleagues, he published a much-noted strategy paper on COVID-19 and the public transport sector. With a temporary loss of up to 95% of passengers, public transport is facing major challenges and the recovery is much needed. So let's listen in what solutions for a green recovery Dr. Richard brings to the table. I am very excited and glad to hand over to you, Lena.
We are starting off with a statement from the C40 Cities Climate Action Network. It reads, "In contrast to national governments and multilateral organizations, mayors have been collaborating throughout their response to the COVID-19 crisis. This unparalleled cooperation will form the basis of the just and green recovery in the world's leading cities." Now, Jörn, in a very brief response, is green recovery essentially a city's job?
Well, that's a very good question, actually. I would say not exclusively. States obviously have a very important role to play in all this. They are the ones who have to set the overall legal framework, and also they are probably the ones with more financial capacity, so they play an important role in setting incentives. That said, cities are extremely important because cities are these places in the world where many, many people live, where you have a really high population density, and that comes with a lot of risks and opportunities. The risks obviously concern risk of infection when we talk about COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, but they also have a certain risk profile when it comes to public transport or transport in general, concerning road safety, air pollution, and so on and so forth. At the same time, you see great opportunities in the more general area that concerns medical treatment, education, no opportunities, jobs. And in transport, they actually have great opportunities in making mobility and transportation greener, because you have such a great density, so you can use public transport systems much more effectively than in more rural areas. And also, new mobility offers often focus on these cities. So if we ask if green recovery is a city's job, it is to a very important degree, because this is where you have all these risks and opportunities. And based on that, this is where you should take the decisions to avoid risks and realize those opportunities that you have.
Great. That's a very interesting point you just raised. And I think it's an ideal Kickstarter for this conversation today. So just let me say briefly, Jörn, thank you so much for joining us in this open street, as we like to call it, and to discuss with us a bit more about the COVID-19 crisis, its effect on the transport sector, and especially the question for green recovery in the transport sector after COVID. To get you a bit more to tell us also about the work that you do at the MIB, I know that you've classified different phases of the COVID-19 crisis. And I was wondering, right now at this time of speaking, what phase of the crisis do you think we're in, and what does that mean for governments and cities?
So what we did in our work is we basically came up with three different phases. The first is an immediate crisis phase. This is what we've seen at the beginning of the pandemic. As a second phase, we defined a calibration phase in which the numbers of infection go down, but there's this always existing risk of new infection waves, and in which society has to calibrate their response to the crisis. And then in the end, there's the conclusion phase where hopefully the crisis will be overcome as an immediate phenomenon, but at the same time, we'll see long-term effects on society, life, and transport. When you ask where we are in these phases, it's pretty hard to tell because it's a very local thing. When we look at Germany, we surely entered this calibration phase where the immediate crisis, the first spike of infections has been overcome. And now society is struggling with basically doing everything to avoid a second wave of infections. But then if you have a look at the global landscape, many countries are probably still in the first phase or even in the grow-up phase of infections. And I think that goes together with the challenge that in many places, either politicians don't want to test as much as it would be necessary, as, for example, in the United States, or other states might simply not have the capacity to test as much as necessary to actually get good numbers. So there's like quite different developments, and then in the end, we sometimes just don't know because we don't have the data on it.
Right. So let's assume for those places around the world where cities or regions are already in this calibration phase, where they have to consider how they will move on post-COVID, how they will deal with the effects that they're witnessing, and how to best address these. A term that's been very prominent in this regard is the green recovery. So we know the EU has been very strong on this topic. They've incentivized and encouraged EU member states to really focus on a green recovery. And I think maybe not all of our listeners are so familiar with this term. Maybe in, let's say, three sentences, I'll give you some more if you want. But what is your understanding of the principle of green recovery after COVID-19, especially in the transport sector?
For me, green recovery would mean first that we cannot simply try to reinstall the things as they were. So we had this system that was running more or less well, depending on where you were, but that had, in terms of environmental implications, obviously a problem with climate change, also with local environmental impacts. So first sentence would be, don't go back there. The second is that to actually go somewhere else, and we can go somewhere else because we have this window of opportunity right now where things might be possible that otherwise won't be possible. We need political and economic incentives that steer towards an economic recovery that focuses on a world that we want to live in. So that for me would mean a more sustainable world, also a more equal world. And if you put these tremendous amounts of dollars and euros and other currencies into the economic system, you should make sure that you use them wisely in a way that makes us end up in a better place than we would have otherwise. And third sentence, I think if we do this right, we might indeed create a new normal that is in many ways at least better than that what we had before. That is obviously related to climate change. If we manage in the transport sector, for example, to push for electric vehicles, both in the car area as well as in the public transport area, we would have great impact, positive impact of the crisis. But at the same time, for transportation in urban areas, this also concerns things like pop-up bike lanes, pop-up bus lanes, more walkable streets, and in the end, more livable cities.
Right. So your advice to not go back to business as usual, as we've seen or as we've dealt with in the transport sector before this crisis, it also means supporting different modes of transport that create in a way more equity, but also have environmental benefits, if I'm getting you correctly.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, because I know we've seen a lot of cities creating these pop-up bike lanes during the COVID-19 pandemic, while we were still in a lockdown, we were trying to get people to isolate from each other or at least socially distance from each other. Are there any cities or any governments that you've witnessed in the past few weeks or months who have really already taken the step of making these intermediate measures or short-term measures into a longer perspective, so that where they've taken what they've done in the immediate crisis and kind of paved the way for a new understanding of mobility after the immediate crisis?
I think people are working on that. I would, in some sense, maybe challenge your question by turning the perspectives long-term and short-term around a little bit.
Oh, please do, yeah.
Because I feel like those cities perform the best at the moment who already before COVID had a very visionary outlook on their mobility systems. So if you have a look, for example, at Bogota in Colombia or Paris in France or even Berlin, those were cities who had plans of how to revolutionize urban mobility already before this whole mess started. So they had a visionary approach. And this approach, I think, allowed them to, when it started, to be really quick in doing the right things. Obviously, the MIB is situated in Berlin, so during the course of producing the paper that we wrote on this, we talked to many cities, but then obviously we most of us are living here, so we witness firsthand what happens in Berlin. And there has been a debate about increased bikeability in the city for years. And it is quite amazing to see what has happened during the pandemic with tremendous amounts of pop-up bike lanes being built. But this is not like an immediate decision. This builds on this previous discourse that has been there. So I think it's never too early to start developing visions. And the people who have been acting now, they knew what they were doing even before the whole thing started.
Right. I think that's a very important point that you're addressing. So the question of how much was transport already on the agenda for a specific city or a government when the crisis hit, that you say that also affected the way in which it was then addressed in the immediate crisis situation, but also in the slowly developing aftermath of this crisis. And I think a lot of the feedback that we've received at TUMI from partners all around the world was also that in some places transport wasn't really part of the first-hand response areas within the crisis. So, of course, the whole healthcare system was at the forefront when COVID-19 caused lockdowns all around the world. But we do know of a lot of people who have advocated for, you know, immediate measures in the transport sector, which sometimes were slow to be put in place. So I'm wondering if the question of how much a city already is working on sustainable transport before the crisis will determine how well they move out of this crisis. Especially because if you look at, for example, incentives placed by the EU, what they're investing in transport projects, how they are showcasing that this is an important area, I think there's a lot of emphasis placed on the sector, yet we don't have a one-size-fits-all plan for green recovery in the sector. So we can't really go to cities and tell them, look, you just do A to Z and then you will get out of this crisis. So what, in your opinion, would be a good advice for cities to find their own way of supporting green recovery within their transport sectors?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. First of all, I think there is something like a standardized way in Europe, which is these sustainable urban mobility plans, which have been set up as a framework or as a process to design city-level strategies. But the problem with those is they're obviously great, and it's great to standardize this process to ensure quality over a broad scale of cities. but they're also quite slow, like too slow for the current situation. If you need impact in, I don't know, 1 or 2 or maybe 4 weeks, you can't implement a whole sustainable urban mobility process planning. So that's a little bit of a challenge. And second thing I think is it's really hard to get a one-size-fits-all solution because cities are so different. They are different geographically, they are different socioeconomically. So I think that's like sort of going back to your first question, that's maybe the major reason why cities have such a great role to play in all this. They are very specific places with very individual characteristics for themselves. So they should basically build their own strategy. And if you ask how can you do that in a way that actually makes sense, particularly at the moment, my response would be that you have this diet of, on the one hand, you have the vision, and on the other hand, you have pilots. And I think those should be developed in parallel. So on the one hand, work on where you want to really want to go, develop a vision on how you think your urban mobility system should look like in 10, 15, maybe 20 years. And then on the other hand, don't wait forever to deduce a coherent set of measures, a very long list of measures, but pick out those projects which push you into the right direction quickly and then just start.
Mm-hmm. What role do you see in that process for intercity cooperation? So maybe you've heard of the C40 Global Mayors COVID-19 Recovery Task Force. That's a group of mayors who came together to really, you know, exchange their experience on the crisis, work together on finding solution, while still all of them, of course, will go back and implement sort of tailor-made version of that in their own city. But how important do you think it is that mayors especially come together and discuss what they've experienced and where they want to move on from here on out?
I think that's tremendously important. Contradicting myself a little bit here, I said that each city is special, and that's obviously right. But at the same time, you have certain cities with similar profiles, very simple thing is like how, like, sort of, is your city built on a mountain or very close to the sea in a flat area, right? That has tremendous implications for your transport systems. So there will be other cities that you can exchange experiences with in a very good way. And I think it's important that cities themselves actually have these interchanges because they share the experience of governing a city, whereas federal governments or state governments more general, they might be a little bit detached from the realities of governing a city. So if this would be a pure interstate debate, I guess that a lot of the like more subtle things and the more valuable information for cities would get lost. In that sense, it's tremendously important that those cities actually sit together, talk to each other, learn from each other, exchange best practices, and start making things change for the better.
Yeah. Because you've touched also on the question of national governments right now, and something that we've, of course, witnessed quite a lot, that they're not capable to speak on the situation in every city within that country. But I'm always wondering, what can their role be to support cities in this process? So maybe from a financial perspective, or you know, from a policy perspective, what are some of the measures that national governments can take now so that they can ensure that cities are able or enabled to create this safe and green environment that they are about to embark on?
Obviously, I mean, you mentioned the two major levers there already. It's finance and it's regulation. In the finance area, I would say that they can give the right incentives for both individuals, but also companies to invest into the right technologies. Something that was hotly debated in Germany is the fact that in the Recovery Act, there was money for the car makers, but as opposed to the financial crisis of 2008-9, that money was reserved for electric vehicles. Previously, there was a, I think it's called Cash for Clunkers program that basically allowed you to throw away your old car and get a new one, but it didn't really matter what car it was. Now, this is limited, or like sort of the incentives that are provided now are limited to electric vehicles. And I think that is a good step. And that's a right step to move into a direction to make transport greener. Obviously, this is still in the car area, so it would be important to move one step further and to actually provide investment for public transport and other forms of more sustainable mobility in urban areas as well. And there, I think the states have the major role to play because they have the financial capacity doing so. Even COVID is complicated when it comes to financing, obviously, because with the lockdown, the economy has struggles, and in general, money is a great issue. But then again, it's about the green recovery idea. So with the limited resources you have, and with the resources that you have to invest into this system to keep it running, where do you put it? And there you should focus on the things that make us move to a better world than we had been in before. And sustainable transport and public transport, I think, should be very high on that agenda.
Absolutely. And I think that is something that you've mentioned in the beginning already, to say that it's also kind of opened a window of opportunity that where we have to spend money now on recovering, so might as well spend it in the right places and incentivize the right technologies or approaches to, in our case, mobility. But there's also so many more issues within cities that now need to be addressed in order for them to recover in a green way. And that actually brings me to one of the other points I wanted to talk to you about, because I know that the Mobility Institute Berlin, of course, is very much engaged also in digital solutions. I know you've looked into ways how digitalization can help transport to become greener. Is that something that you see right now in this current crisis as a connection point as well? And maybe do you already see it happening in certain cities that we've become a boost in digital solutions for, let's say, public transport or shared mobility, as we've seen, for example, for paying, you know, cashless in stores, which I think has gained a tremendous push during this crisis?
Yes, obviously. I think that digitalization will play a very important role in fighting the pandemic. And I think you see a lot of discussion, you see a lot of push towards e-ticketing, for example, which would sort of be the public transport equivalent to cashless payment. So in fighting the pandemic, there's definitely room for digitalization, and it is coming. Another example is one thing we did in the work that we published is argue that multimodality and multimodal integration will become increasingly important to give users the flexibility of like choosing one day the bus, the other day a shared bike or a shared car, to just become as flexible as you have to be during the times of the pandemic, where the risk situation basically changes very quickly. And this area has been of great interest in our conversations with cities afterwards. So this is probably the area of the five things that we wrote down that was of most interest. So the five things would be expansion of public transport offer, multimodality, easy and simple pricing schemes, digitalization, and agile organizations. And this interlink between multimodality and digitalization was probably the thing that cities wanted to talk about most and were most interested in. So definitely, yes.
That's an interesting mix of areas to take action in. And I think we'll be very much looking out for additional work that the Mobility Institute is doing on this topic. I'd like to ask you to keep us up to date on any new ideas or any new developments with regard to this COVID-19 crisis. And I'm looking forward to maybe picking up this discussion once we're a bit further on in this progress again.
Sure.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Jörn. It was great to have you as our first TuMe podcast talking transport transformation guest. Hope you enjoyed your time here, and I'm sure there might be some more questions redirected your way from our side in the near future.
Great, thank you, and hope to talk to you soon again.
Thank you, Jörn and Lena, for these interesting insights into the topic of a green recovery in the transport sector. We hope you all enjoyed this premiere and you'll tune in for the upcoming episodes. We'll be releasing a new episode every 2 weeks, covering diverse topics of sustainable mobility. In the meantime, we invite you to subscribe to this channel and also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. You'll find all the links to the TuMe platforms and our website in the description box. If you have any questions, comments, or topic recommendations, feel free to leave a comment here or send us an email. This podcast has been recorded on August 18, 2020 and brought to you by TuMe. Thanks for tuning in and hear you next time.